Say hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
And welcome, everybody, to Midday. It's time now for What You Got Cooking. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to be talking about recipes and food trends and traditions and good eats with our resident foodies, John Shields, the chef, author, and owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA, and Sasha Wollhandler of Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering. So if you're one of the ones doing the cooking, some or all of the cooking tomorrow, no doubt, you have planned a menu, you've done most of the shopping, and you're ready to rock and roll. But let's say just for argument's sake, that you are, in fact, the one doing the cooking tomorrow and you haven't done some or all of the above. So, as I see it, you have two options. The first, curl up in a fetal position and wail at the top of your lungs. And by the way, if you're going to go fetal, you have to wail. If you just go fetal and you don't make any noise, you totally lose the salubrious effect of going fetal. So, please keep in mind, you must wail at the top of your lungs if you go fetal. The other option, stay tuned to this program for the next hour, right? Because Sasha and John are here and they're going to walk you through this. So even if you're pretty well set in terms of preparations for tomorrow, we hope that you'll stay tuned as well. We might unearth some ideas that you may want to incorporate into your Thanksgiving festivities. And we want to hear from you about what you're doing for Thanksgiving. Favorite recipes, favorite memories. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or send us a tweet @MiddayTomHall. So, Sash, John, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
Good to see you guys.
Going back to that fetal position, and those of you who are wailing, and those of you who are equally prepped are probably also wailing that a million people are coming. I just read this article in the Times Sunday by Ann Padgett, one of my favorite authors.
And yeah.
She wrote this thing.
Bel Canto.
Yes, yeah. Fabulous. And she wrote this piece about when she was 17 years old at Sarah Lawrence. She had been terribly homesick, so her parents flew her home at Halloween, and then she was going to go home again at Christmas. And it was too much money to go home again at Thanksgiving. So she said she prepared her own Thanksgiving. And she said it was a great Thanksgiving, but the thing to take away from it, she said, if you can read and you can taste and you've got a cookbook, you can make this dinner. And that's what I say to all of you. Stop wailing. There's 80 million recipes out there, and you'll have about 10 more from John and myself and from you, Tom, and from all the people calling in. So read, taste, and go forth.
And go for it.
The coward
prosper.
Yes, right. Because, John, I mean, as cooks go, I mean, Thanksgiving is a pretty basic meal. I mean, the things that most people associate, the sides and stuff that most people associate with turkeys and, you know, stuff.
It is. Stuff. It is. And people, you know, get so excited and have so much anxiety around it. And it's one of the simplest meals, you know, that we know. It's all comfort food.
Right.
And most of it is plant-based, starchy, wonderful things that make you feel good. And, you know, sometimes you don't want to complicate it too much. You know, people want to go in all kinds of really exotic directions. And I learned that as a young chef. I flew back from California. I had a couple of restaurants out there. I came home and I'm going to cook the family meal. And I kicked it up, you know, four notches.
Right.
They hated
Forget it.
They
right.
hated it. They wanted Grandma Gertie's, all the recipes to be just the same. And I think that kind of connects us through generations.
Yeah.
Sometimes that connects us, and, you know, we're eating the same potatoes that Gertie made, you know, three generations ago.
Yeah.
So there is something comforting to that.
I mean,
that.
You know, I, for various reasons having to do with my schedule and stuff, a lot of years I work with the Santa Fe Symphony as a conductor in my other life, and they do a performance of Messiah the weekend before Thanksgiving. And in the last 20 years, I've conducted probably 15 of those, right? So I'm usually in New Mexico coming back Monday during the day, and then I have a rehearsal with the Choral Arts Society on Monday night. And so by getting my act together, and then I was coming here, you know, to do the morning show on Tuesdays. So I'm like starting to shop for Thanksgiving dinner when I hosted it on Wednesday, you know, which is a little bit late, you know. And so after a while, my wife, my daughter said, you know, you're killing yourself to do this. Why don't we just go to our dear friend Chickie Grayson's house? And that's what we've been doing now for the past several years. And Chickie's just one of our dearest friends. She has 30 or so people over. They cook two turkeys. It's a lot of fun. And I just bring a side dish, you know. So I'm off the hook for cooking Thanksgiving dinner, and I don't cook Christmas either because we go to other friends' house for Christmas, and we've been doing that's a tradition in our family now for a long time. So I don't get to cook turkeys anymore, and I miss it. I mean, I really do. But well, it's, you know, but I can live vicariously through all the folks, you know, that are going to call today and you guys. But one of the things when I did cook Thanksgiving dinner, you know, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure that the turkey's in the oven in time to eat at 3 or 4, because that's what the tradition in our family was, to eat early in the day. And then, and you go through all this stuff, and then, of course, dinner's over in like 20 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
it's like 5 hours in the kitchen.
Always.
And then everybody, okay, let's go watch the football game.
Well, to the point of the turkey, I want to bring up those of you who are thinking and listening and sitting and haven't defrosted your turkey yet.
Yeah, there are safe ways of doing that. All right.
Let's run home, take yourself away from the desk right now, run home and get that turkey that is still frozen, get your tub clean and put it in some ice cold water to start it defrosting now.
Yeah, and that will defrost it safely and quicker than if it's just sitting on the countertop.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to have left it in the fridge for 3 days, and if you haven't done that and have just bought a frozen turkey, put it in a big tub of cold water to
get it defrosted.
Exactly.
Right. And there are places still selling fresh turkeys.
I mean,
a lot of places you have to order them in advance. I know down at the farmer's market, they've been taking orders for some weeks, but there are still places that have them just sitting around.
So. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And the other thing that you can do, if for some reason you're still in that fetal position tomorrow morning and you still haven't done anything and you've invited 8 people over, you can buy turkey parts. There are lots of breasts out there that you can just buy the turkey breasts, you can buy the turkey legs, and they'll cook up in an hour or two, hour easily. Mm-hmm. So you can go that route. If you have done nothing and you are really still sucking your thumb and you're a last minute Lucy, go and buy some sliced turkey tomorrow and put it on a nice tray.
That'll work too. So what about brining the turkey? This is one of those words I've heard thrown around for years, and I don't even know.
Yeah.
John, what does it actually mean to brine a turkey?
Well, it's kind of like if you're corning a beef, you're taking it and you're putting it into a salt water mixture. Normally, that's what a brine. And then you can go in any direction from that point of adding flavorings to it, whether you're going to put peppers in it or if you're going to put garlic in it or if you're going to, you know, kind of get some infused flavor. And it's a relatively new thing for turkeys. I mean, you didn't see it too much, but now, you know, people are either in the brining camp or the not brining camp. And actually, Sasha came up with one to do a dry brine.
Yeah.
So Sasha, how does that work?
Well.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Work? This is just something I've learned in the last few months, the dry brine. And I just started it. There's the question, to brine or not to brine, as Shakespeare would say. And I brined a turkey a few years ago, and I started loving it. But this year, I was reading about this dry brine after I had slipped on the brine that was sloshing all through my kitchen 2 years ago. I mean, it is a messy process, and you've got to find a big pot to brine your turkey. And this dry brine is really great because what you do is you just make a mixture of salt. And we put the recipe online for you, and there's many of them out there on the internet. But just salt, and I put a little bit of brown sugar to balance it, and then I put some citrus and peppercorns, and I rubbed it all throughout the turkey. And actually, I raised up the skin on the turkey breast and gently slip your fingers under there and rub that dry brine into it. You cannot do it on a kosher turkey. You cannot do it on turkeys that have already been infused with any kind of other aromatics. So you really do need a fresh turkey, but because what you are doing is putting all this flavor in. And even though I failed science, and that word osmosis still brings the word shivers to my spine and not passing a science test. Apparently, it's an osmosis process. The salt pulls out some of the moisture and then goes back in and creates this juiciness. I brought a turkey breast that I cooked up this morning with a dry brine on it. and we can just see if, you know.
Now, that's what I call dedication, cooking a turkey the day before Thanksgiving.
Well, this is just for you all to taste a little, seeing if we like the dry brine versus the non-dry brine. And those of you out there that have tried it, let us know. In brining turkeys, don't you usually have to wash them off, the salt flavor?
Yeah, you have to wash
them. But the dry brine, I've been told, leave it on. And I didn't wash anything off. I don't think it's too salty. I think it has some good flavor in there. This was a turkey breast, by the way, folks. For those of you that have a tiny Thanksgiving at just two people, it's really the way to go. It took about an hour in the oven to cook this. Or even a little less.
And the advantage of brining is what? That it makes it, tender and moist?
I think it gives it a little more
flavor.
Theoretically, yes. Now, taste and see. I think it gives it a tiny bit more, but it might just because I want to believe
it. This is nice and moist. I mean, just by the touch, it's moist.
Yeah, it is moist. Yeah. It's good. I mean, and this under the skin thing, there's all sorts of stuff you can stick under the skin. Aaron Henkin and I were talking about this yesterday. His secret sauce is to make like a parsley butter thing. So
infused butters,
with parsley, and he rubs that all around the turkey under the skin.
Under the skin,
And it's important to go under, John, isn't it? Because you if you go off, it sort of burns off, right?
Sometimes
you're on top of
it'll burn. So if you go under there and put it under, as the fat from the skin goes down, it goes into the butter. And then that all goes into the flesh, and you have a pretty flavorful
bird.
And then
I did put butter on this under the skin of that one,
it's
too.
It's delicious.
And kind of in there. So what do we think, guys?
I like it a lot.
And that had, you know, kind of a basic, as I said, salt and pepper. And I put a little brown sugar to balance that out, and I put some.
You don't have to slosh it around in a.
No, no sloshing at all. This is the dry brine.
And there are people who grill the turkeys. You know, I know people who do. They do them in the deep fryer.
They fry them. Yep.
I mean, and we also every Thanksgiving, it's like, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, we hear the media stories about the houses that caught on fire because people were deep frying their.
We lose a lot of garages every Thanksgiving.
They
all go up.
I like that Geico ad where the garage has gone up and they tell you about their insurance. It's pretty funny.
And how long to cook a turkey, John? I mean, is it almost always uniform in terms of number of pounds times number of minutes equals
That's
ecstasy?
What they say. You know, if we go according to the scientific thing, you know, it's about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes a pound for an unstuffed bird. Mm-hmm. And they'll often say 25 minutes for a stuffed bird. I find myself, if you're going to have a large turkey, you know, in the 18 to 20 to 22 pounds, if I cook it with that in mind, I find it dry.
Yeah.
That's too much. Yeah.
I go for unstuffed about 15 minutes a pound.
Exactly. That's what I would
You know, at about 325. And if it's stuffed, I go, you know, about 5 minutes a pound longer. But, you know, I've gotten away from stuffing the turkey a lot.
So
now.
You make the stuffing separately?
I'm making it separately. And I make a stock ahead of time, you know, with some of the giblets and I kind of drizzle that on to the stuffing before I bake it a little bit. So it gets that turkey flavor, but it's a safer way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the turkey cooks much more evenly and more quickly if it's not stuffed.
Yeah, interesting.
And
I've
may I suggest, folks, get a thermometer.
Yeah.
163 to 165. Actually, if you take it out at 161 or 162 and let it just sit for some more, it'll reach 165 is your safe temperature. And then you can trust what you see. I still remember as a little kid coming to Thanksgiving in Washington and my aunt, who was in the science field, and I guess meat thermometers were just coming out then, and I saw her putting a thermometer. I said, "Mom, what's Aunt Helen doing with a thermometer in the turkey? That's the weirdest thing I've
Aunt
Helen,
the bird.
And is the
Aunt
turkey
Helen,
sick?
Aunt Helen was a little weird. What can I say?
That's it. Turkey is a fever.
It was shocking to me. Picture that Norman Rockwell painting with a little kid going, what's going on here?
John Shields is a chef and author of several cookbooks. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He and his husband, John Gilligan, are the proprietors of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha Wohlhandler has been a mainstay of the culinary scene in Baltimore for 40 years. She and her husband, Steve Susser, own Sasha's 527 restaurant and catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. Sasha's having a moment of self-awareness here. It's been that long, Sasha, and we appreciate
Screaming.
It.
it's the monkey and scream right now.
It's What You Got Cooking here on Midday, and we're, of course, talking turkey. We'll have more with our favorite foodies after a quick break. And your calls, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to Midday, What You Got Cooking. By the way, during the midday hour tomorrow, more on Thanksgiving feasts. NPR will air Turkey Confidential. Host Lynn Rosetta Casper comes to the rescue of Thanksgiving cooks across the country for any last-minute dilemmas that they may face. If you are just joining us today, our resident foodies are here to help you avoid Thanksgiving dinner disasters before tomorrow. Sasha Wohlhandler of Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street and John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA join me in the studio. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. We have Martha on Baltimore calling Midday. Happy Thanksgiving, Martha. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
Hey, John and Sasha. It's Martha Thomas.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Great.
Well, I just wanted to throw my method in. I discovered Martha Stewart's Turkey 101 recipe about a million years ago.
Uh-huh.
And you soak cheesecloth in melted butter in an entire bottle of white wine, and you wrap the turkey in it and roast it, and it's absolutely delicious.
Wow. So you roast it with the cheesecloth on it?
Cheesecloth, yep.
No,
and at a certain point, the cheesecloth kind of chars, it kind of turns dark brown, but when you baste it, you know, the cheesecloth kind of absorbs the liquid, the wine and the butter, and kind of like soaks it into the skin.
Wow.
It comes out gorgeous. I mean, it looks like Norman Rockwell.
And do you take the cheesecloth off, like, for the last 20 minutes to brown the skin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, Martha usually does a good job. Those are usually very well-tested recipes.
Yeah, Martha Stewart.
Don't mess with Martha.
And Martha Thomas writes about food very nicely. Yeah.
Martha, have you tried different types of white wine with it, or does it make any difference at all?
I go as cheap as possible.
All right.
I follow the Julia Child method. I keep the good stuff on the counter for myself.
Martha, a wise woman.
Martha, do you find having a glass of that wine as it cooks helps out too?
Yes, exactly.
That's right. You lower the bar for taste just a little bit when you have a couple of glasses of wine. Well, Martha, thanks for the call. Happy Thanksgiving. I appreciate it. We're going to go to Tammy now in Severna Park. Tammy, you want to talk about the way your mom used to cook the turkey. How you doing? Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for calling.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well and to your guests. Yeah, my mom would be 96 this year.
God bless.
Bravo.
She would have been. She died a few years ago. But one of the traditions that I've carried on is that she cooked her turkey breast side down. And I've never had a turkey that wasn't moist doing that. It is a little more laborious, but it turns out perfectly every time. And I just didn't know if your guest, if they cooked their turkey the same way or not.
Okay, so breast side down. You put up it, and sometimes you tie the legs together you've stuffed it,
and then
because you got to
turn it upside down. And we're having an upside down turkey this year. Mm-hmm. My sister Patricia is going to be making it, and we've done it before, and it really works.
Yeah.
Because if you think about, you know, the higher air in the oven is the hottest, and if you turn it upside down, the breast is not going to get dried out.
And
we turn it back right side up, like about, you know, 20 minutes before it's finished, again, just to crisp it up. But it really works.
Yeah, that's good.
Upside
down cake and upside down turkey. That's good. Thanks for the call. Mary in Parkville, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to Midday.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Happy Thanksgiving. You know, that is a great idea, the previous caller had. I think I'm going to try that. But my family won't accept a Thanksgiving turkey that is not put in the oven at 6 a.m., and let cook all day, because that's how my mother used to do it. That's how my mother-in-law did it.
And what size turkey do you use?
Actually, they were about a 15 pound.
I was going to say, I mean, that might work for a 74-pound turkey. But it doesn't get dried out?
Well, we're all happy with the results, so maybe it is a little dry, but, you know, with the gravy and, you know, the stuffing and all that.
And the fact that all your grandmothers made it that way, that makes it perfect.
Exactly. The tradition is everything around here.
Well, yeah. We like that. That's great.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks. It's good to know that that works, certainly for your family, and I appreciate it. So happy Thanksgiving, Mary. I appreciate the call. So gravy. Let's talk a little bit about gravy. I want to talk about stuffing, too, because I do, by the way, have the perfect recipe.
Well, do tell, Tom. Let's hear that stuff.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
All right.
Okay. It's like the one thing that I can contribute to a conversation with these two fantastic cooks in here, because I make really good stuffing. Of course, I haven't made it in like 5 years now. But anyway, the gravy freaks me out. I mean, I go fetal when it comes time to make gravy. I find it very difficult to do. I get really nervous.
Everybody.
Clammy.
A lot of people do.
It's a very nervous kind of thing for most people.
I think
because it's one of those things you have one shot at it.
Yeah.
You know, if you mess up, you know, at that moment, and this is right before everybody's going to sit down, you're toast.
Yeah. Well, what is your secret weapon? Well, I know what mine is.
Well, I have two different things. I mean, I always make a bit of turkey stock from, you know, different parts of the turkey. Sometimes I'll buy a couple turkey pieces, like a turkey wing, and I make a long cook stock with vegetables and stuff in it, just so I can – everybody wants to up the gravy.
Right.
Because everybody wants gravy, so you have to be careful with that. And then the pan drippings are the most important thing.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
That's why
there.
I wouldn't want to fry the turkey, because I need those pan drippings, because the grease is the thing. You're making a roux. Basically, we're making
a
roux.
Exactly.
So you need fat and you need flour.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you cook that flour in the fat and cook it for a while, because you want to take out that flour taste, take it off of the stove and slowly whisk in the turkey stock. Put it back on. Don't put it all in, just put some in. Then you have the ability to balance it. You can make it thinner. You know, it won't get too thick on you. You can control it.
Yeah.
And if you have a good basic stock and you really have those beautiful pan drippings and the fat, oh, my God, you're going to have a good gravy.
It really is in the roux. That's the secret, is to have that, because that's your thickening agent. And don't let that word roux scare you. And if you don't have the time, you will always have the drippings. Even from that little turkey breast that you all tasted, you have some gravy here. And I made that with the little drippings that I had. And because it was only a turkey breast, I didn't have a lot.
So it doesn't even take a lot, right?
It doesn't take a lot. And always have a box of chicken stock there to add to your, and some white wine or whatever you're going to add at the end. Taste, folks. It's so important.
Yeah.
And as John said, you can control the thickness by the amount of roux. If you want it thicker, add a little more roux, even at the end.
All right, we interrupt this broadcast for a midday turkey emergency. We have Alan joining us from outside the Giant on Reisterstown Road in Baltimore.
Emergency!
Alan is
right
a first-time turkey maker, and we have a turkey emergency. Alan, the doctors are in. You've called the right place. How you doing? Happy
Alan.
Thanksgiving.
Excellent. I was listening to your show because I'm driving up to my native Long Island to cook a turkey. Now, I've got plenty of experience cooking lots of things, but this is my first turkey. I've gone online. I've done a lot of things, but I'll hear the questions. First of all, thermometer. I've never worked with a thermometer before. I'm told I need one. And I've got two questions about the thermometer. One, where exactly do you stick it in the bird? And second is what exactly it's used for. That is, I hear it, if it goes up to 165 degrees. In other words, is my turkey ready when the thermometer is reading a certain temperature, or what am I using the thermometer for exactly?
Good questions. If you haven't used it before, those are really good questions.
Yes,
Sash?
It will be done when it is, as I said, I would even take it a little less, like at 161 or 162, because when it sits out, Alan, it's going to cook more, and you will get a juicier breast then. And if you put it in the thickest part of the breast near the leg, right in there, and if you'll see. It'll just register. When not in the oven, when you take it out and put it in there and see where it registers. If it's 155, not done. 158, not done. That's why you want the thermometer. That will help you. But I want to go back to, how are you traveling with this turkey to Long Island? Is it on the top of the roof of the car? Not the good. I know it's 40 degrees out, but it's sunny. It'll be getting brown breasts, a suntan. I don't like that. Don't tie it to the roof.
The turkey itself is waiting for me on Long Island.
Oh, good. Good. I sort of had this image of you with a turkey on top, kind of like Mitt Romney did with the dog.
No, I don't do that with dogs or with turkeys.
Excellent.
Those are good choices. All right, so you're driving to. By the way, what's the traffic like? How you doing?
Oh, I really am standing outside of a Giant on Reisterstown Road. I'm not making this up.
Okay.
I'm going to get back in my car as soon as I get my next question. Well, my next question answered, and that's this: the recipe that I have calls for coating or smearing, whatever you want to call it, butter on the turkey, and then just salt, pepper, and nutmeg, which sounds fine and nice and simple for a first-timer like me. Thing is that this is a kosher turkey going to kosher parents, and I'm hoping that I can substitute, instead of putting butter on the turkey, putting on, well, not maybe margarine, but one of those olive oil spread sort of things. Will that do? Is that going to be all right?
Well,
is it going to give it a funny taste?
Well, what I would
do is... Another good question.
What my mother did, cooked a kosher turkey. She, and I still do this, even with brining or not brining, I put a little mayonnaise, a very thin layer of mayonnaise, which will go with your kosher turkey, on the turkey. And that will help bring the brownness to it. And so I wouldn't use the margarine. Now, I have never put the mayonnaise under the skin. I don't know how I'd feel about that. What do you think, John?
It would work.
You could lift up the skin. I mean, my mother was not back then putting mayonnaise under skin, and she certainly didn't use butter because you can't mix butter and turkey. But you might use a very thin layer of the mayonnaise. And then I would also, if you're in the Giant, buy a bottle of in the spice department of the Herbes de Provence, because I think that'll jazz it up a little bit, and your parents will really like that.
Instead of the salt, pepper, and nutmeg,
no,
you're saying mayonnaise and Herbes de Provence?
Mayonnaise, Herbes de Provence, and still the salt, pepper, and the nutmeg, too.
Yeah, I think it would be delicious.
It'll be delicious. Let us know next time how that worked out.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Alan, happy Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful trip. Drive safe. And do remember that if you do take the turkey out when the thermometer is reading like 145, you're exposing yourself to a lawsuit. So don't do that.
162
but, I think you're in great shape.
Five.
I think you're in great shape, Alan. So have a great trip and enjoy it. John in Glenarm, you have a great gravy recipe to share with us here on Midday. Welcome to the show and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Thanksgiving's our big day in my family, and we have about 20 to 25 people at our house, and we do two turkeys.
Nice.
And I'm not sure where I got this, but for years now, this is what we've been doing. About halfway through the roasting, we put carrots, celery, onions, a little bit of onion, and most importantly, celeriac, celery root, right in the turkey pan underneath the turkey, and let that roast and all the pan drippings. And then when the turkey's done, separate out the fat, and we have one of those stick blenders. You don't need any roux, you don't need any thickener, and just grind all those vegetables up with enough broth to make as much gravy as you want to make, and it's the best gravy on earth.
Wow. John, I love that. It sounds delicious.
It sounds like an Irish vegetable soup that I just had, and it's delicious.
Yeah, got back from Ireland.
It would be fabulous on mashed potatoes and turkey. It would.
That's terrific, John. All right, well, thank you for that terrific tip, and have a wonderful holiday. So let's talk a little bit about stuffing. We talked about the upside and downside of putting some stuffing in the bird and taking it. If you don't stuff it, stuff the bird, then it really is a little safer, isn't it? You're sort of tempting fate when you stuff the bird.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice.
But it is good.
Drenched in all that bird stuff.
And it stays nice and moist. Yeah. It's really moist.
But you always have extra, so you're going to cook some in the oven anyway.
You have to.
Yeah.
You know, you always have to have another pan just for the extra stuffing, because people would be really unhappy if they come to a Thanksgiving dinner and there's not enough stuffing and not enough to take home.
Right. And stuffing ain't the kind of stuff you make on Wednesday night. You know, that's Prince Spaghetti night. So, what's your favorite stuffing recipe, John?
Well, I generally go to my grandmother's recipe, which is very, very simple. She would take butter and saute onions and carrots and celery, maybe a little bit of garlic, some kind of like fresh herbs or herbs de Provence she would put in there. And then she put that all over the, you know, a little bit stale bread. And she would sprinkle a little bit of milk into it, just a little bit, just to make it moist, with salt, pepper, some sage. Later on, we started putting things like some toasted nuts in there, sometimes sausage. And for a while, I was doing a lot of it, often like Southern Maryland style, and we would do an oyster stuffing. And I would mix it with half white bread that was stale and half cornbread that was stale, and chop up fresh shucked oysters, or you know, a jar of shucked oysters, chop that up with all the other things that I had just mentioned, put that in, and then take some of that beautiful oyster liquor that the shucked oysters are in, and just drizzle that all over, and it gives it this wonderful seafood briny thing.
So that's all over the place. That's got all sorts of stuff.
All over the place, but it is absolutely delicious.
Oh, yum. That's good. Sash, what do you think?
I think the important thing for those of you out there who are making stuffing for the first time, follow John's advice, you know, saute up your onions and your celery and your dried bread, and to have some stock available so that you can moisten it. That's really important. But also remember, you can add the add-ins that you all can do. You can add in nuts. You can add walnuts, pecans, slivered almonds. You can add in sausage, and that can be any kind of sausage. If you want the chicken sausage, if you want tofu sausage, and keep the stuffing that way. If you want to add apples of any, apples, pears, all go wonderfully.
Dried fruits
are just magnificent in it. So stuffing is a real place to get creative to bring it all in.
And you sort of can't mess it up.
You really cannot.
There are very few things that you can put in stuffing that would be
and
horrible.
Also,
I mean, anchovies, for example. Don't do that.
And those of you that are just, again, in a pressure cooker time or haven't done anything, there's a lot of bagged bread stuffing mixes out there that you can take and go through from there. And once again, as Ann Patchett said, if you can read, you can cook. Mm-hmm. But you must taste.
And I go the fruit way. So my favorite way to make it is with cranberries, fresh cranberries, and Granny Smith apples.
Yeah.
And then I've even made it with gluten-free bread, because we had a couple of folks with celiac challenges, and it didn't affect it one way at all. It was terrific. And then you moisten it with some chicken
broth.
Once
again, the more flavor you can add, and before John was mentioning Herbes de Provence, guys, that's thyme, sage, it's all parsley. It's all messed together. That's all it is. Yeah. It's a fancy way of saying it.
A bunch of different herbs.
It really is.
So here's a quick question before we take a break. This is an email from Anne, who says, my daughter plans to cook her turkey overnight at 170 degrees. Is that safe? I've never heard of that.
I haven't
I've
either.
Heard of the guys who cooked meats like strapped to the engines of their cars.
Yeah.
I've heard about that. But cooking the turkey overnight at 170 degrees, would that
Well, it's a low temperature.
It's a low temperature.
And that has worked. I have done hams overnight very slowly. I'm sure you have too. I've done briskets. A turkey, because it is so lean, I don't know. I'd be curious to find out. I'd be a little nervous that it would really be dry, even at the low temperature of 170, but I'm not sure. I don't think it would be unsafe.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you check with the thermometer and see what the internal temperature is when you do it, it wouldn't be unsafe. But it's kind of like the old-fashioned way of making a shad. That you would cook it overnight at a very low temperature, so it would dissolve the bones.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still was a little bit, the shad's better not cooked much more quickly.
Right,
yes.
Right. Final email from Linda, who says, when my brother was first married, his new wife wanted to impress our parents. So for Christmas, she made the turkey that we mentioned with the butter and the wine and the cheesecloth. That's the one that Martha Thomas told us about. It was wonderful, Linda says, and she was triumphant. What a coup. So Linda's from Stewartstown, Pennsylvania, and we appreciate that email. We will be back in a flash. Sasha Wollhandler has been part of the Baltimore foodie scene for many years. She and her husband, Steve Sisser, run Sasha's 527 restaurant and catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. John Shields is a chef and author and the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He and his husband, John Gilligan, are the proprietors of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls and your emails and tweets. 410-662-8780, midday at WIPR.org. If you want to send us an email, and at midday Tom Hall, if you feel like sending us a tweet. We're so glad you're with us. Stick around. And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Thanksgiving traditions and ideas with our resident foodies, John Shields, the owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art, and Sasha Wolhandler, who runs Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering in the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Charm City. We'd love to have you share your favorite Thanksgiving traditions and recipes. Our phone number, 410-662-8780, or email midday at WIPR.org. If you want to drop us a tweet, our handle is at midday Tom Hall. A fun Thanksgiving fact. 1621, the first Thanksgiving, but it wasn't until Abraham Lincoln declared that the last Thursday in November should be when we celebrate Thanksgiving. That was in 1863. And Franklin Roosevelt is the one who set Thanksgiving as the fourth Thursday of November, and that was in 1939. Congress approved it in 1941. So, you know, we think about Thanksgiving goes back to the Pilgrims and stuff. It's been manipulated a little bit in not so distant memory. So thank you, President Roosevelt, for making the last Thursday of November a day that we have what a lot of people really think is the best holiday ever, because it's not somehow, you know, laden with the Passover meal can be tough, the Christmas dinner can be tough, Easter dinner can be tough. But, you know, Thanksgiving, it seems kind of neutral.
I think it's a great time.
It is. It's my favorite holiday.
Yeah. I think it's mine as well. I really enjoy it. So let's talk about sides. Let's talk about cranberries. I mean, it used to be, when I grew up, it was cranberries, you know, sliced out of the can.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I grew up hating them. But boy, you know, when we got to be a grown-up, all of a sudden, you could buy these fresh cranberries in the grocery store. You didn't have to go to some funky elite place.
I'd like to say there are still some people that really like their cranberries out of a can.
That's fine.
Don't want the fresh cranberries. But how,
who am I to judge?
How easy is cranberry sauce to make?
So easy.
Really, really easy, folks. Those of you that have your hand on the canned cranberries, if you're in whatever supermarket you're in right now, step away from the can. Step away from the can and walk over to the produce section and grab a bag of cranberries. Because what you're going to do, you're going to empty that bag, wash them quickly, put them in a pot, put a little sugar in, put some water, or preferably I enjoy some orange juice.
So do I.
Orange juice. And
a little citrus
turn
thing, right?
Those three, and then just turn on the stove and let it cook for about 15 minutes until your cranberries have popped. 10,
boom,
15.
You got it.
Boom, and you can add nuts to it. You can add oranges. You can add orange zest. You can add ginger.
Ginger is good.
Ginger is delicious. So, boom. That is cranberry sauce.
And a lot of that recipe is actually on the back of the bag of the cranberries.
You
so
can add some
right
red
there.
Wine. Yeah. It's delicious.
Yeah. And so, John, do you have a favorite way of making it?
Well, Sasha
pretty much
kind
that
of went,
way?
Went, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. went right through it. I like a little bit of the citrus.
So the
citrus
orange, is a good
A little
good
bit add. Of zest, mm-hmm. and I like some ginger in it. Easy.
Yeah. A few years ago, a friend in upstate New York made a thing as an appetizer, which was cranberries cooked with some brown sugar and some white sugar, and then mixed with horseradish and Dijon mustard. And he put it over cream cheese and served it on crackers. And it was delicious. And we've come to make it just to serve next to the turkey. I mean, and it really is good. And my wife, Linnell, is a horseradish addict. She loves the stuff. She puts horseradish on cereal, I think. And so it's great. So it's got a real kick to it. And it's a lot of fun. So we always make the basic cranberry sauce and the kicked cranberry sauce. And it goes also well with something like a beef tenderloin or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it would. That would be beautiful.
Or a pork tenderloin.
Totally.
Or something. Yeah.
I want to also talk about that bag of fresh cranberries, which I hope you all have in your hands right now, because I have literally a 45-second to a minute recipe here for a cranberry relish. And you just take those raw cranberries, you put them in your food processor. I put one apple that I quartered or cut into eighths, and I word it around. It is just delicious. And I put a little sugar with that. And I put ginger. Sugar, ginger, apples, cranberries. Put it in the Cuisinart, a little orange juice as well. Done. And it is so fresh. Taste this, Tom. It's such a good, and John, I want you to both taste. It's really just fresh.
You have a raw. It's raw.
It's raw. It's good for you. It's going to help with all the digestion of all the other things you've eaten.
Oh, it's terrific. That's good.
Very light.
Let's go back to the phone. Sharon from Owings Mills. Thanks for your call to Midday with John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler.
I have a surefire way of keeping that turkey moist. It's worked for me since I was a little kid, and I'm in my 50s right now. My mother always put orange juice on the turkey. No fat whatsoever, no mayonnaise,
no butter or any of that
butter.
Stuff. Right.
Uh-huh. Orange juice and her mixture of spices, a little onion, a little garlic, a little of the poultry spices like the rosemary and the thyme and the sage. And I add in some nutmeg and some ginger. I always have to have ginger in my cooking. And midway through the cooking, you flip that turkey in the pan, and I have never had a problem.
Oh, so you flip it over midway. So you cook half on one side and half on the other. Uh-huh.
Where do you start?
Do you start with the breast down or up?
I start with the breast up, and then midway through, I flip it over so the breast is down.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Good, and you don't need butter and all that stuff. So just the citrus again and the ginger.
And the drippings from the turkey kind of seep down. Sounds great.
Well, thank you, Sharon. Appreciate that call. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Amy in Owings Mills, welcome to Midday with John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler.
Hi. I was going to tell you about my turkey that I cook in the convection oven at 400 degrees, and it only takes a little over 2 hours for about a 12 or 14 pound turkey. Mm-hmm. I cover it halfway through. I have a pan with a lid on it, and then I uncover it for the last half, and I've never had a problem. It always turns out juicy with a crisp skin. And takes hardly any time, so my oven is free in the morning for other things.
So you can do other stuff. That's great.
Nice. But I wanted to tell you about a really fabulous cranberry recipe that I got from Bon Appetit a couple years ago, where you cook red wine and sugar down. You reduce it to about half, and then add the cranberries, and then at the end, you stir in a couple tablespoons of pomegranate molasses.
Oh, I like that.
And serve it with some chiffonade of mint and cilantro.
Whoa, that sounds fabulous.
It's really great.
I bet it's beautiful, too.
Yeah.
And you can eat it. It's like you want to just eat it with a spoon.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that sounds terrific. Well, thank you, Amy. Have a happy Thanksgiving. How many people are you cooking for tomorrow?
I'm cooking for 14. I just finished making my stuffing, 32 cups of breadcrumbs, because my husband gets mad if I don't make an extra container and hide it so that we have enough to left.
That's right. Well, that's great. And Amy, it sounds like you're in the kitchen as we speak. So we're delighted that you called. Thanks so much. And happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Katie in Frederick, you have an Irish mother. John just got back from Ireland. He's still jet lagged because of the trip. He's like right off the plane. Welcome to Midday and happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. Hi, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you all. Yes, I have an Irish mother, and I would like to tell you what she did with her stuffing. And so she used the bread stuffing, and it always had sort of the Italian seasoning. And actually, she would taste the dry breadcrumbs after she'd added the seasoning to get it, you know, dressing just perfect, just the right taste she wanted. And then what she used as a mixer was butter. She put butter into it and, you know, soften the butter, but not so it's runny, and then mix it in, you know, like you would a pastry. And then her trick was always to not stuff the bird too tightly, because you ended up with soggy, kind of nasty, tight stuffing. So hers was always beautiful and crumbly and sort of flaky almost.
Yeah, that's important. Not cram it in there.
Right.
I think a lot of people feel that they have to do that.
The other thing is, I don't know if people know, but you know, you can use the neck area as well for stuffing.
You can.
Right.
So lift up that flap of skin and put some stuffing in there, right? So, you know, that was quite a good area as well for stuffing. And then the other thing is that what I do with mine, I've developed my own thing. I put bacon, sliced bacon, all over the turkey. So on the thighs, on the breast, on the entire turkey, bun it in the oven, and then about 20 minutes before the turkey is done, the bacon is now nice and crisp, I pull it off and then brown the turkey breast, and then I use that bacon crunched up in my gravy.
Ooh, yum.
Wow, I have one thing to ask. Do you have room for one more at your table tomorrow? I want some of that stuffing.
We're coming over.
We're coming right there.
Okay, sold, Katie. That's terrific. How many are you cooking for tomorrow?
Well, actually, what we're doing, we have two families getting together, and we're going to have three turkeys and God knows how much else going on. So, a lot of food, a lot of people.
That's terrific.
Great big dining room. So we're actually bringing our food to their house. But may I also say, I have one other thing to say. I don't understand why people are afraid of making gravy. What I do with my gravy always, and I make gravy with everything, I dissolve the flour in a little bit of liquid. You know, you can choose water, a little bit of wine, a little bit of sherry, or whatever you want. But have a liquid rather than pure flour going into that warm gravy, and then you never have lumps.
It's true.
Indeed. Well, Katie, congratulations. That sounds like a terrific way of doing all that stuff. And we're going to give you the last word here. John Shields, Sasha Wohlhandler, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much.
Thanksgiving time.
Folks, keep the mayhem to a minimum and keep the joy flowing.
Indeed.
Yes.
And John, you and I will see each other tomorrow morning. We're running the Turkey Trot together to support the YMCA.
Absolutely.
So we'll be at Druid Hill Park. Well, I appreciate both you guys coming in. John Shields is a chef and author of several cookbooks. He's the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He and his husband, John Gilligan, run Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha Wohlhandler and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Mount Vernon. We'll have some recipes about stuff we talked about today on our website, wypr.org/midday. Tomorrow, during the midday hour, it's Turkey Confidential with host Lynn Rosetta Casper. She'll take calls and questions from around the country from noon to 2. And then Friday, midday is at the museums. We'll re-air my conversation with Baltimore Museum of Art Director Christopher Bedford and curator Katie Rothkopf. Plus, Marvin Pinkert, the director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland, tells us about their latest exhibition about the role of Jews in medicine. Then we're back live here on Midday Monday with a radio trip to another great museum. I'll speak with Wanda Draper, the new director of Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture, as well as curator Willis Bing Davis about their current exhibitions. So before we go today, a word about two of the many things that I'm thankful for. The first is you. I really appreciate your tuning into our program. I'm grateful for your questions and comments, your suggestions about stories that we should pursue. And I'm grateful for the fact that you care deeply about our city and our state and our country and our world. The Midday community of listeners is a community that all of us on the Midday team cherish. The opportunity that we have every day to contribute to the ongoing conversation about our democracy and about the things that animate and illuminate our lives is precious to us. We do our best to meet the challenges of this precious responsibility, and we appreciate so much that you are part of that conversation. I'm also thankful for the terrific team that I'm honored to work with here at Midday, our producers Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong and Kathleen Cahill, and our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall. These are people for whom I have the greatest respect, and I am blessed with the chance to work with them to bring you this show. We are also happy to welcome two new members to the Midday team, Charlie Hines and Zandra Ellen, who will be providing production assistance. Thanks to them, and thanks to you. I'm Tom Hall. All of us at Midday wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving.